Good morning, everyone. My name is Daniel Jacobson, and I'm a program manager on Visual Studio.
Hi, I'm Clint Ruckus. I'm a product manager on Windows.
My team in Visual Studio builds the tools for Windows developers, including Universal Windows Platform developers. And today, I'm really excited to share with you many of the improvements we've been making with Visual Studio 2017 to make you the most productive and best Windows developer, hopefully, you've ever been before. We've really made improvements everywhere in the product, from installation and creating a new project to distributing your app for beta testing and getting usage telemetry and analytics and all sorts of stuff. I want to show you different tools everywhere in your development inner loop that will make you a better developer, including coding, debugging, you name it. So this is going to be very demo heavy, and we will have some time for you at the end to ask some questions. I please just ask, if you have a question at the end, use the microphones in the middle so that everyone can hear you. So from the very beginning, when you first install Visual Studio 2017, if you haven't already, you'll notice some pretty drastic changes to the UI. What we did with Visual Studio 2017 as an entire division is we focused on making sure you only download and install what you need for a much lighter weight product, IDE, and hopefully it runs faster too. So with that in mind, when you're getting ready to do Universal Windows Platform development, you simply need to select the Universal Windows Platform development workload. There's no longer some kind of convoluted, ambiguous list of checkboxes that you need to worry about getting exactly right. If you want to go ahead and add .NET Desktop or ASP.NET, web development, all of that's available to you. But the thing that I want to call out specifically to you as UWP developers is one pretty big change we made with acquisition. We noticed that many of our developers are pure .NET developers, which is great. So what we did was we took some of the C++ tools and made those optionals. They're by no means not important, it's just they're big, several gigabytes big. So if you don't need them, we don't want to give them to you. But if you do need them, you can just select this optional checkbox and be ready to go. Some other improvements we made with the acquisition experience is you can actually install multiple instances of Visual Studio 2017 on the same machine, which, since it's a lot smaller, that's not as crazy as it may seem if it was 2015, for example. And you can still install 2015 with 2017, like you've always been able to do in the past. But what this allows you to do is start testing out the preview tools. So all of you here at Build are probably forward-looking, excited about what we're showing you here, and maybe want to try out the latest and greatest preview tools. Now you can do that without messing up your production environment. Further, with the Creators Update SDK, we actually made it so all of the Windows 10 SDKs that you install on your machine exist purely side by side. So if you're in the Windows Insider program and you want to try out the latest flighted SDKs, you can install those as well without breaking your production environment.
That's fantastic. Now I'm so happy I can now remove the do not install on your production system warning because you can do side by side.
Yeah, previously with the anniversary update, if you wanted preview SDKs and you installed it on a production machine, your apps would no longer submit to the store successfully, which was no good. So we fixed that, and now you can go ahead and test out latest Visual Studio previews, latest SDK Insider previews, and when you're ready to continue working on your production apps, just return to your production environment. The next thing that we improved is the file new experience pretty drastically, and I'm really excited to hand it over to Clint to demonstrate Windows Template Studio.
So we have a competitive group here. Uh-oh, was it four? Daniel jumped the gun a little bit. So we have a slightly competitive group, and my boss Cliff and Daniel's boss Uni came up with a challenge for us. And that challenge is the race to build a functional application here.
I'm starting now, by the way.
On stage. Now, I know this app will take about 2 hours, and this is an hour-long session, so we have a little problem here. How can we build this out in time? So this app must be a nav pane application, use the MVVM Lite framework, have a settings page, a maps page, a master detail page, can suspend and resume, have a background task, and a toast notification. So as Daniel's already coding here, I'm proud to announce Windows Template Studio. Windows Template Studio is the fastest way to go from 0 to F5 so you as the developer can code what you want. We've partnered directly with the community here and made a very, very strong file new experience. So I'm going to go to Visual Studio now. And you can see, Where is your mouse? There we go. That we have Windows Template Studio here. It's a Visual Studio extension that can be found in the gallery. And I'm going to click Create. So here you can see, before, all we had was a blank app. This is the number two developer ask in the ecosystem, is give us back templates. So we went in and created Template Studio. So let's go create our wonderful Contoso, if I could spell it, app. I'm gonna click OK. So now you can see a very, very familiar outline of what you'd expect to see from a wizard. This is very similar to the Visual Studio wizard. And the first step is to pick your worldwide traits for your application. So we have your project type and your code framework. So project type, we have navigation pane, pivot tab, and a blank. Ooh, man, you are coding really fast now. And we also have, for frameworks, code behind, a generic version of MVVM, and MVVM Lite. And I'd like to point out, we've been partnering with the community, once again, for everything we did here. We have Laurent in the front row, and we partnered directly with him to be sure what we coded was best practices for MVVM Lite. And because we needed to take it, the dependency here, I'm going to click that, and you can see here, we show you the license that you are taking the dependency on. Now, I'm going to click Next here, and this is where we really kick it into a higher gear. With a couple quick clicks, we can add in our pages and our features. So I can add in our maps page, a master detail page, and a settings page. And if I wanted to, I can rename all these features right there. Now let's go add in suspend and resume, because every good app should be able to resume itself, the background task, and our toast notification. That quickly, I now have my full-blown application. And I'm just going to click Create here, and now it's going to start generating it.
I give up. You win.
If you go to aka.ms, we have our full-blown GitHub page. We partner directly with the community from the start all the way to the finish of this project. So if you have any pull requests, issues, forks, we have full-blown documentation on everything here. I'm going to go quickly back to our PowerPoint slides here and talk about some of our philosophies. It's a community-backed project. We have Matt Lacey and James Croft here, along with Laurent. We work directly with the community to be sure what code is generated is exactly what you guys want. We also partner directly with the Windows engineering teams to be sure that we have best practices and patterns for you, the developer. And we also have helpful in-code comments. I'll go in and talk a bit about this. And once again, I like to stress it: we are a strong starting point, not a finished application. You as the developer still have a lot of work to do, but we want to be sure that you guys jumpstart faster. So now it's fully generated. This should look a lot like an application that you would have wrote. We have, it's fully localized by default. We picked ENUS by default. You can use the multilingual toolkit to help expand this out. And what I can do here is F5, and this full, the application's gonna create. Going back to the to-dos list, here are all the wonderful in-code helpful tasks for you, the developer, because we don't know everything. Like if you, the background task, which background task trigger do you want? So there we can add in a direct code saying, go here, look at the documentation, and help you jumpstart faster. So as you'd expect, it works exactly like you'd hope. We pull up the location prompts just like you would. We have a default location here at Pike's Place. I click OK. It's going to jump us to the convention center, there we go. And we have master detail. We partnered with the design team to be sure that we have a responsive design by default. And we even have some wonderful theming support here, all built in. So I'm extremely excited to see what you guys come up with, along with what feature requests are built in. We already have the Prism team and the MVVM Cross and the Caliburn Micro team interested in getting their frameworks built in as well. So like I said, it's a community project. Can't wait to see what you guys produce.
So obviously, that was going to be a tough challenge for me to beat, but Clint and I work together, so I'm really happy that he just got me started with this application. But pretty much all modern applications rely on some sort of set of modern services. With Visual Studio 2017, it's much easier to integrate with some of the modern services you rely on. Let me show you what I mean. So here we have the app that Clint just created. It's a really great start, but I want to go ahead and add user authentication to my application so that my users have an identity. Right now, everything they do is just using an app. I can't do really any service integrated things without some user identity. So if I go ahead and right click on the project, I can select overview. And this is another new feature in Visual Studio 2017 that provides helpful documentation everywhere from creating your first Hello World application to monetizing, packaging, or selling your application in the Windows Store. But the tab that's really interesting is Connected Services up here in the top left. We've provided some wizard experiences in Visual Studio to help you integrate or even create your Azure services directly within the IDE so that you can stay in your environment that you're comfortable with. So what I'm going to go ahead and do is I'm going to go ahead and integrate with an Azure mobile app. I've already created an app prior to this, and I've done maybe 10 minutes of service configuration so that I could sign in using Facebook authentication. So here's the service that I want to integrate with in my Azure subscription, and I'll go ahead and click Add. Now this is going to do several things to my project as well as to my computer. So first, it's going to open up a web page bringing me directly to the documentation telling me what I can do with my mobile app and how I can do it. So this is actually how I figured out how to do the authentication, and it realistically only took 10, 15 minutes. It's pretty powerful. The other things that it'll do is it's going to add the Azure Mobile Client SDK as a NuGet package reference in my project and add a code snippet to my app.xaml.cs file. So in here, it's instantiating a global client object in my app.xaml.cs that can be utilized in any one of my other app classes or applications classes. Since we're going to be doing authentication, though, I want to make one minor tweak to this, and that's to make this HTTPS. If I were to make any sort of authentication requests, pretty much every authentication provider is going to reject that if it's not HTTPS for good reason. You don't want man-in-the-middle attacks snooping your authentication tokens.
Okay, let me go shut down Wireshark now.
There you go. I'm protected, don't worry. So now that we have our service ready to go, I need to create some way for the user to actually log in. So I'm just going to create a simple button in my mainpage.xaml. Thanks to Clint's helpful comments, I know exactly where to place the content for the root of my grid, which will just be a button. And I'm going to put it in the middle so it's easy to see. Horizontal alignment equals center. Vertical alignment equals center. I'll make it nice and big so we can read it. I'll say log in. I'll give it a name. Now, I could just create a simple click event handler and author the code in the code behind, but that defeats the point of what Clint's Template Studio just did for us. We already have MVVM ready to go. So in my view model, I'm actually going to create the command that I can bind to my button to be able to invoke the login method. So what I'll do is create a new iCommand, and using Roslyn, the control dot experience, I'll add the missing reference. I'll call it login command. And then I'm going to have one simple getter that's going to return the action to invoke the login method of my mobile client object. So literally just one method call, and I can invoke Facebook authentication in my application. So return new relay command. And again, because we already have the MVVM Lite NuGet packages referenced in this project, I can use control dot to add the missing reference. And then I will have an asynchronous method call because we're doing web authentication. And then I'm going to await my app.myMobileServiceClientObject.LoginAsync. And then this is just an enumeration. So it looks big and scary, but it's just telling me which authentication provider I'm hooked up to. So when I do this and hit dot, you can see Azure Mobile Service supports Facebook, Google, MSA, Twitter, and even AAD. And they're all fairly simple to configure in the back end. So I'll then click Facebook, close it, and I'm missing one other using statement in my project. So I'll use that, and I think
I'm also missing an
end parentheses, so I will do that as well.
Wonders of pair programming.
Now, that's really the only line of code I need for this command. Granted, you would probably want to do some exception handling, but I just want to show you user context. The only other thing I'm going to do is extract this to its own method so that we can debug it and inspect some of the local variables. Thankfully, Visual Studio makes that easy too. I can highlight what I want to extract to a new method, hit control dot, extract method, and just call it login. Now I have my login method that's being returned with this relay command. The last thing I need to do is bind the command to my button. One other new feature we have in Visual Studio 2017 is X colon bind IntelliSense. So I can type X colon bind view model, which is properly hooked up in my view, dot login command. Now let's go ahead and make sure the breakpoint is set, which it is, start debugging, and see if I can get some sort of user identity or authentication token in my client application so that when I make future service calls, my user has an identity. Now in your service, you could do a whole lot more, such as calling the Facebook Graph API to get friends lists, username, email, whatever you need. But for now, I just want to show the client side of things. So here I can see I have my global client object with no current user object. My current user is null because no one has logged in. Let's take one step through the code. Oops, must have hit another button. So here I can see I've got a Facebook test user account that I can log in with.
Password's Fluffy Bunny.
You guys can all hack into my account. I don't need to see that, but I do want to see my local variables. I'll just highlight it, actually. So here I can see my app.mobileClient object. I now do have a current user object. And if I inspect the properties of that object, I see I have my mobile service authentication token that Clint is not able to intercept because I used HTTPS, as well as my local user identity. So just like that, couple minutes integrating with my service, adding a line of code, binding it to the button, and I have authentication in my application.
And another great thing to note here is all this stuff works with, once again, MSA, AAD, Google, Facebook, just a couple lines of code. Yeah.
And the configuration in the back end is pretty easy. It's just configuring some client secrets between your services on the provider and your service in Azure. The next thing I want to talk about is changes we're making to NuGet. And we're starting with UWP applications. This is called package reference, and it brings some really powerful improvements to the way you manage your NuGet package dependencies. Before I tell you about the benefits, I want to show you how this will look different in Visual Studio. So for those of you who have been doing a lot of UWP development already, you probably noticed something a little bit odd about the solution layout here. You can see I have multiple NuGet packages referenced in my application, but I don't have any external file enumerating those package dependencies. There is no project.json file in this project. With Visual Studio 2017 and projects targeting the Creators Update SDK, we now by default opt you in to the NuGet package reference model, which is going to be the way you manage package dependencies going forward. So if I look at the csproj file and I search for package reference, I can see all of my NuGet package references directly in the project file. Now this gives you several advantages. Let's go back to the slides to talk about those. First and foremost, you have direct MS Build integration, and the way you're managing dependencies in your project is now consistent across project-to-project references, NuGet package references, you name it. So we don't have this weird external file that you need to modify every time you want to change your NuGet package dependencies. With direct MS Build integration, you get other benefits as well. For example, you can have package management across multiple projects. So here's a scenario that's probably pretty common in many large or larger scale organizations. You have some test framework that your company relies on that's built in-house, and you use that same library in all of your test projects. When you want to go ahead and update this test framework, every consuming project has to update their dependency reference to update the version to leverage the latest one. With package reference, you could author an MS Build targets file that includes the right version and then consume that in every single one of your test projects. And now when you update any underlying frameworks that you rely on, you just update it in one file, continue to consume the same target everywhere, and that's it. So hopefully it makes universal package dependency management much easier across your suite of projects. You also get finer control over NuGet package dependencies. So here's another likely common scenario. You have your own NuGet packages that you use in-house because it's just an easier way to share code and to recreate your development environments. Well, say you want to be able to consume debug versions of your NuGet packages when you're debugging your application and consume release versions of your NuGet packages when you're getting ready to release your application. With NuGet package reference, you can do conditional package dependencies for debug and release. So that way, when you want to see if the issue is a result of your NuGet package or your app itself, just use everything debug. And when you're ready to ship, use everything release. As I mentioned before, this is going to be the NuGet package reference model going forward. And all of the .NET projects are going to start shifting to this model, whether it's WPF, Xamarin, .NET Core, you name it. So those targets and props files that you're consuming for your universal package dependency management and your UWP apps, will be applicable everywhere. Last but not least, this isn't UWP specific, it's more for the NuGet package authors out there, is platform multi-targeting. You can build libraries that have multiple target framework monikers in the project file and automatically output a NuGet package that can be consumed in different frameworks or in different platforms. So it just makes the life of NuGet package authors pretty much a lot easier. So next, I'm sure you've heard a lot about it, .NET Standard 2.0. I want to talk about how this is important to you as Windows developers, which I know you're interested in. Before I get into the details of NetStandard 2.0, I just want to do a little bit of history on .NET Standard. So I'm sure all of you have used portable class libraries in many of your projects in the past, and it's an incredible tool for sharing .NET code across multiple platforms. The way PCLs worked was that you would specify your different target platforms. The tooling would then limit the set of APIs available in that library to the intersection of APIs available in all of those platforms, which is awesome.
Well, you'd imagine this becomes a very complex Venn diagram very quickly.
Say you have four targets in your portable class library. How are you going to know exactly what APIs are available in each one of those four targets and then be able to take the subset of those? That's a very difficult thing to do. What we're doing is we're changing the shared code model with .NET Standard, which is essentially a base set of class libraries implemented in each .NET platform. So it's essentially a reference implementation for any .NET platform to implement. What that enables you as .NET developers is, frankly, it makes you a lot more valuable. If you learn .NET Standard libraries, you're learning one API across all .NET platforms, and you can consume .NET Standard libraries in all .NET platforms. We kicked this off last year with .NET Standard 1X. Universal Windows Platform actually implemented .NET Standard 1.4. And it was really a great stepping stone to get us to where we want to be soon. Some issues with this was that the API surface was relatively small, and frankly, there weren't any libraries out there because it was new, right? No one had built .NET Standard libraries yet because they were brand new. So with .NET Standard 2.0 coming in the fall creators update of Windows, we have a huge increase in the .NET API surface area, and we're adding a library compatibility shim that will allow you to use existing libraries out there so that, for example, you don't have to rely on developers creating brand new libraries for .NET Standard. So we're going to have about 20,000 more APIs than .NET Standard 1.x, and we've actually done an analysis on all of the NuGet packages out there and determined that about 70% of all of them are API compatible with .NET Standard 2.0. Now, there might still be some weird PowerShell stuff going on or some hard-coded file paths that won't work with UWP, but just from an API standpoint, almost all of the libraries out there are now available to you as UWP developers targeting the fall creators update of Windows. Some APIs that we're kind of expanding on, many of these are there today, but we're increasing the number of APIs available in each namespace. And one that I want to explicitly call out because I've run into pain in the past is Reflection. How many of you have tried Reflection in UWP using existing .NET framework code and it just didn't work? Well, we're adding about 600 APIs to system.reflection to fill in the gaps. So your existing Reflection code should just work in UWP going forward, which is a huge benefit. And I know Clint's behind me holding the sign. SQL Client will also work with .NET Standard 2.0 in the fall creators update of Windows, which will be a huge benefit. So enough about .NET Standard. I also want to talk about .NET Native. And for those of you who haven't jumped into UWP yet, .NET Native is essentially our pre-compilation technology that takes your intermediate language binaries from .NET compiler and compiles it further to native code, which gives you a better memory footprint, it gives you a much improved startup time, and some other benefits as well. But with .NET Native and Visual Studio 2017, we're now shipping the toolchain and the compiler with your .NET Core NuGet package reference. So you no longer have to wait for Visual Studio updates to go back and forth between different versions of the .NET Native compiler. You can take advantage of their updates and their improvements and their bug fixes whenever you want, just as a NuGet package update. In addition, with .NET Standard 2.0, with the fall creators update of Windows, we're adding incremental compilation support to .NET Native. So sometimes it's difficult because .NET Native compilation, especially for larger projects, takes a while. It's doing a lot more. Well, now if you run your app in release mode by default and you're using .NET Native, you encounter an issue, you can fix it, and it should compile much, much faster than it has before. And another improvement we're making with .NET Native is portable PDB support. This should give you better diagnostics information in Visual Studio as we continue to improve the tooling for portable PDBs, but it gives you some other benefits as well. One advantage is that .NET Standard libraries by default leverage portable PDBs. So for a UWP project, leveraging .NET Standard, trying to leverage the portable PDB format, you would actually get out-of-memory exceptions with the .NET native compiler, and that was no good. So now you can use it from existing libraries. Everything should just work for your symbols. All right, back to the demos. That's our break from demoing. Everything else has a demo now. So I'm actually going to close out of this project. I want to show you how this project evolved into more of a production based app. So I'm going to open a different project. And what I really want to highlight with this demo is the Windows community and how awesome you guys really are for the Universal Windows platform. Oops, did not work. Let me close solution first. I'll just do that. Oh, I just opened the same one. The names are too similar. There we go. So in this application, we didn't want to start from scratch. We wanted to use what was already out there. And what's been really incredible with UWP is how the community has come together to build tools, services, and especially controls for other UWP developers to consume. Two that I want to call out explicitly are the UWP Community Toolkit and the Telerik controls that we've partnered with to open source and make free for everyone. So here I have this application, which is essentially a customer orders database, something that my sales professionals could use to manage different customers as well as sales information. This control that I'm using that's essentially most of the view is the Rad Data Grid control from the Telerik UI controls suite. And it's really powerful. Check out what I can do. Say I want to see only my customers from a certain company, like Contoso. I can group by company and then collapse AdventureWorks and see all of my customers directly from Contoso. And that's just one simple application of what this control can do. If I navigate to their GitHub page, I can see all of the different controls available to me as open source free controls to consume in my application, as well as get a lot more information from them. One other advantage of these controls is that Telerik provides services as well, so if you have issues, they're pretty quick to respond. But the fact that it's open source means you can also just fix it yourself. And they're very quick to respond to pull requests and GitHub issues. I filed several myself and got a response within a day. But yeah, here's what the Rad Data Grid control can really do. We're just using it for simple text.
And they do also offer additional professional support if you need that.
Yep. So you can have multi-column sorting, single-column sorting. But this is a control that would probably take weeks to build, if not longer. Now available to you for free to just start using in your app. Another control that I'm leveraging here is the UWP Community Toolkit for my hamburger menu. I think there's actually a pull request out for Windows Template Studio to start using this control for the navigation model, because why reinvent the wheel, right? So this is several hundred lines of code to custom implement. And with the UWP Community Toolkit, it's actually pretty simple. So if I navigate to their documentation, which is phenomenal, I can see here's the XAML that I really need. And then I need a little bit of code behind to create some objects to populate the control itself. And this adds some flexibility, so you can create custom types to host in the pane itself. Now this saved me tons of time, but that's just one example of a control available in the UWP Community Toolkit. They have animations, they have helper classes, developer tools, services, everything. And I really like what they do with some of the animations, leveraging composition, because we all know that can be really tough to custom write. So for example, the fade animation, if you want to have a control fade in and out. Now, partnering with the community has been a huge pleasure for Microsoft, and it's been amazing what the community's been able to do and open source for all Windows developers to benefit from. Let's go back to PowerPoint. So far, we've showed you a lot of tools to help you get your app up and running, but we haven't showed you any real coding other than that one command. You probably use Visual Studio for more than everything else. Hold on just one sec. You probably use Visual Studio for more than anything else to actually write code. I mean, that's what we excel at. We've got some of the best coding tools. And what I want to show you is not the .NET stuff. I want to show you XAML coding improvements. Since you guys are all Windows developers, I'm sure you're most interested in XAML. So let's take a look. Cool. And Clint helped me set this demo up. Thank you very much. So it should load in just a sec. So here I have my application. And what I want to do, when you saw me run my app, the navigation menu and everything else was kind of white and gray, and there was no color. It was fine, but
yeah,
a little boring.
I'm a big fan of Battleship Gray, personally.
So what I want to do is I want to navigate to my app shell file to be able to add some color to my pane, just a little bit to make it exciting. So the first tool that I really like is the Go to All tool, which I can access by hitting Control T. And what I can do is I can use this to navigate to any one of these different types of things in Visual Studio, whether it's symbols, a line number, or files. So I'm actually going to navigate to a file and start typing app shell.xaml right there. I can hit Enter, and the XAML page should open up. Now what I want to do is I want to find my hamburger menu, which since it's not a whole lot of XAML, it's pretty easy to do. I mean, this whole file is less than 80 lines of XAML. And I want to go ahead and add a pane background property to this control. One of the big improvements we made with XAML editing that was long past due was just IntelliSense improvements, leveraging Roslyn services. So in the past, if I were to type blue, I would see blue and blue violet in Visual Studio 2015. But now you see everything that contains the word blue. So if I want to see, okay, which kind of blue do I want, all of them are listed for me.
I seriously only thought there was two blues.
But this improvement is there for all XAML Editor IntelliSense. So it's much more similar to the way C# IntelliSense works. We also have Pascal casing completion. So I actually want to use powder blue. I can type PB and hit Enter to get powder blue. Now, one other common scenario for me, especially when I'm leveraging community-backed projects, is I always forget to add the namespace reference. So when I added my hamburger menu control, I pretty much looked directly to the UWP Community Toolkit for inspiration, copied in the relevant XAML stuff, and tweaked the properties for how I needed it. But it wouldn't compile, and I had this issue. Finally, with Visual Studio 2017, we have automatic namespace completion. So just like you have in C#, I can hit Control Dot, and I can add the missing namespace.
Something tells me my favorite command now is going to be Control Dot.
Control Dot is probably my most used command in Visual Studio. We also have namespace auto sorting and removal, so you can clean up your code, which again is something we should have had, and now it's there. So let's go ahead and run this and see if it looks any better. And so some of the investments you'll see with XAML Editor is just a more consistent experience across all of Visual Studio. That same expectations that you have for C# is what you get in XAML, and so you're not going back and forth between mindsets of how is IntelliSense going to work for this file type and how is it going to work for this file type. It's pretty much the same everywhere. So that looks a little bit better.
Look at that powder blue, everyone.
But I don't really like how that customer is hugging it, so let's go ahead and fix that. With our next thing, so after coding, I'm sure you probably spend more time debugging in Visual Studio than pretty much anything else. And again, since this is very UWP-specific, I want to show you UWP-specific debugging tools. First and foremost, with Visual Studio 2015, we introduced XAML UI debugging. And if you aren't already using it, I highly encourage you to do so. This tool alone probably saves me more time than any other tool that was released in Visual Studio 2015. I can use this little window up here and this Enable Selection Adorner to find this text block in essentially my live document outline of my application. So this is the live visual tree, and it shows me every single control in my running application. Further, when I select this, I can open the live property explorer to view the runtime properties of the control. I'm going to close diagnostic tools for now. So what I'm going to need to add to give a little bit of space is a margin. So I can add a new local property to this control. And for now, I'll just do 10 on the left and 0 everywhere else. So 10, 0, 0, 0, I'll hit Enter. If I return to my app, I can see the change was made live. The app continues to run. This was all available in 2015, but in case you didn't know about it, I want to show you. But we've made improvements with 2017 as well. So with this change, if I were to stop running my application and restart it, the change has not persisted. I've only made this local property change to the runtime control. Now what I can do is, using XAML UI debugging, click on this thing here, and it takes me directly to that control in the XAML itself. And now if I want to change any properties, I can go ahead and just start, that is the right one, right?
Yeah.
It should say customers. Yes, okay. So text customers, I can't read. So now what I can do is I can actually just add the property in the XAML itself.
I feel like 100 is a more appropriate value.
So let's go ahead and emphasize the point and make it 100. So I just edited my XAML file, the control updates in the running application, and I can save this file and persist that change. So when I restart my application, everything is there. So what this enables is a really powerful UI development workflow. You have the XAML designer to create your basic layout. You can drag and drop to get everything about where it needs to be. You have XAML UI debugging to figure out what are the properties I need to change and how do I need to change them to get it to look just as my designers envisioned it. And now you have XAML Edit and Continue to go ahead and, as you're debugging, just make the changes while your app runs and finish your application. We've heard that some people pretty much just use the designer for the first couple days of development and then just purely use Edit and Continue to get everything just as they need it to be. Now, that's just a couple new tools that I really like with 2017, but there's another one that I'm really passionate about called XAML UI Analysis. Now, this tool is not on by default, so first let me show you how to enable it. In the Runtime Diagnostics Tools window at the top left, you'll see Select Tools. So I'll go ahead and select UI Analysis. And what it'll tell me is that I need to restart my debugging application because it's actually going to kick off a running Windows service, which is monitoring what's going on the UI thread of your application. And what this tool will allow me to do is find UI performance and accessibility issues as I build my application. I know from experience that those are the kinds of bugs that usually get pushed to the very end of development and then don't meet the bar to get fixed because you need to ship. Well, how much better is it that you can now fix them as you develop? So let me return to Visual Studio and take a look at some of the events. So now you see I have a lot more events than I did before. I had 9 and now we're up to 63. And this is preview tools, so hopefully it's going to respond. We may have a hang. There we go. Sorry about that. My computer's been doing a lot today. So let me go ahead and expand this and actually filter out the non-UI analysis events. So that's all we see. So here I can see I have a lot of issues with this application that I could go ahead and fix. Unfortunately, this tool wasn't available when we first started building this app, so we weren't able to keep them down. And then, as you know, doesn't meet the bar. We had to ship. So let's take a look at some.
Always be shipping.
There you go. So some of the events that you'll get is when you're using binding instead of x:bind. x:bind should give you some performance advantages over binding. So it'll give you a friendly reminder, hey, maybe you want to change that. Some of the ones that have really helped me in the past is trying to identify when I'm not virtualizing my list view controls because it's in a layout control that doesn't support it. And that, especially for larger collections, can really affect the performance of your application. But the notifications that I really appreciate are when I'm missing UIA automation property names because that's really important for accessibility. Let me just show you one that I found earlier today. So I can find my element main command bar of type windows.whatever.commandbar has UIA name that is null or empty. So I can double click on this event here and it takes me directly to the control in the XAML file. But if I don't know what that means, I can also click more information on this. Oops. Maybe.
And I think there's
some service running probably hanging it.
Okay. Let's go back to slides. So in theory, this would be, you'd click it and it would bring up the website, explain what actually the UIA name is.
We got time, we'll get this demo. It's a cool demo. Let me go ahead and restart Visual Studio real quick.
This never happens to anyone ever.
I've got a bunch of preview stuff installed here that I've been working on, so that's probably impacting it. But I'm really, really impressed with this tool itself. So I want to show you the benefits, and the documentation is really what makes it special.
So another reason why you'd actually want to use the UIA automation peer?
Automation properties, that name.
There we go. It also helps out automation testing. So if you're doing UI testing, this not just helps out the narrator, it also helps you out as a developer to be able to deep link into your application to do UI automation testing.
All right, so we have the app running. Here we go. It should be able to find the event very quickly. Oh, UI analysis may have turned off because it didn't save. It saves if you close Visual Studio the right way. Sorry about that. So this will show up. Again, I'll search for the command bar control, and I want to show you the documentation that they've produced for these types of things because I've actually learned a lot just from reading that one page of documentation about essentially common mistakes that are made with UI code. So command bar. And again, I don't even have the XAML file open, so I can double click on this and it'll open the file for me, which is helpful. And then I can click more information on this issue, and it takes me directly to the anchor in the documentation explaining what that issue is, what causes it, and how to fix it. So the issue here is if a user reaches an element with no automation properties name, they often have no idea of what that element relates to, especially if relying on screen reader or other accessibility technology. And the solution is really simple. All you need to do is set the automation properties .name property. So again, using XAML Edit and Continue, I can just go ahead and add that single property, and I'll call it command bar, and be good to go. So now if I were to restart this application, that event is gone, and I just have some 50-ish left, 44 left. But as you develop, a better practice to do would be, okay, you see one, get it back to zero. You hit another one, get it back to zero. And then when you're ready to ship, you don't have to worry about this huge bug backlog of UI performance or accessibility issues. So next, we've heard time and time again, when you're ready to submit your app to the store, one of the most painful things to do is to create all of your package assets that the store relies on, for good reason. I mean, there are so many different devices out there with different resolutions that rely on different scaled assets, but creating them is very difficult. So with Visual Studio 2017, we've made it so creating all your assets for your package is a one-click operation. Let me show you what I mean. So here I can see all of the assets that I have are the assets that come with a template. They're the little square with an X in the middle. But I want to change that. I want to give my app an actual logo.
Now it's time for my challenge.
So now what I'll do is I'll use my Microsoft unicorn picture, the fire-breathing unicorn, and select which assets I want to create. And I'll include the package logo, as well as which scale factors I want to use. Then I simply click Generate. A dialog prompts me saying, is it okay if we remove your existing assets? Which, yeah, they're just the boring X's. I don't need those. And then I hit okay. And here I can see my assets are now fully created.
I created one.
So what used to be hours and hours of work going back and forth with designers and developers to get the right versions of all of those assets is now one click in Visual Studio, a couple minutes. Here you can see I now have a splash screen. I have the icon on my taskbar. If I search for the application in Start, I can see Contoso app has the icon there as well. And I'm ready pretty much to go to the store. Cool. Let's close this. Actually, let's go back to slides. For the last demo, Visual Studio Mobile Center for UWP development. This is probably one of my favorite demos because of how fast and how cool it is. And what this allows you to do is it essentially gives you like mission control for your mobile applications and your UWP applications. So if any one of you wants to time me, in 5 minutes or less, what I'll set up with Visual Studio Mobile Center is usage telemetry in my application, automated builds, and automatic distribution for every time I check in an application to both Clint and I. So we'll get an email saying, your app is ready, do you want to download this version and use it? So let's go ahead and start. I'll start by selecting Add New App in the Visual Studio Mobile Center dashboard, and I'll enter an app name, calling it Build 2017. I'm using Windows and UWP, so I'll select Add New App. And the first thing it tells me to do is, okay, go add this single line of code in your app's constructor and make sure you have the right NuGet package references. I'm going to skip the first step, the NuGet package references, and just add this line of code to my constructor. So in app.xaml.cs, let's go ahead and add that one line of code. So one other cool new feature that's not on by default, but it's an advanced C# editor feature, is being able to install missing NuGet package references directly from the Roslyn language service. So when I hit Control Dot with that light bulb experience, I can go ahead and install that NuGet package and add the missing reference. But we actually need one level down. We don't need Microsoft Azure Mobile. We need the analytics package. So I can also have it take me directly to the NuGet package manager, searching for those packages. So I can navigate down to mobile analytics, install, and this will take just a second, and then I add the missing references to that class, and I can hit F5, and just like that, I have telemetry. I know who's using my app, I know what versions they're using, I know how much time they spend in my app, and all sorts of other cool information that I'll show you. So here, let's go ahead and add the missing reference, again using Control Dot, my favorite command, and hit F5 to get my app running. So I'm just going to get the app running so that some missing NuGet, still in pre-release, there's some version dependency warning, but it still works. When it's released, that'll be fixed. But now let's go ahead and set up automated builds as well so that we can see the data and we can get it building and distributing to Clint and myself. So fortunately, it integrates with Visual Studio Team Services, GitHub, and Bitbucket already. I have this Git repository hosted in VSTS, so I can click just a couple buttons, and because I'm logged in with the right account, it automatically logs me into VSTS. So I'll select Build 2017. And then what it'll do is it'll analyze the repositories in this VSTS account and figuring out which solutions you have, which branches you have. Here I can see I only have a single branch master. I can select it and set up branch And it's actually gonna go ahead and figure out what projects, configurations you wanna do, and kick off the first build immediately. So as soon as I click save, it will kick off a build. But I also wanna distribute builds. So for now, it's only gonna distribute to myself, but I can add Clint pretty easily. So once I save this, I can go ahead and go to distribute. And I can see that part of the collaborators group is just myself. I am one of the testers. So if I click collaborators, I can invite users to this app by email, and I'll add Clint. I spelled it right, right?
Yeah.
C. Rutkus.
And you spelled Microsoft correctly.
There you go. Almost. Almost missed it, though. So just like that, this build is queued. It's going off. And as soon as it's done, Clint and I will both receive an email asking us to download that version of the package. Because we're both working on the app, we both have access to the solution. We have the certificate previously installed. But if you're using an organizational certificate, you can configure this to sign with your organization's certificate. And anyone that has that cert installed can then install the package. But now I want to show you the analytics that we already have. So here I can see I'm the only user of this application because I just added usage telemetry. I can see I'm using it on a Surface Book. I can see I'm using it on the Creators Update version of Windows. And I can see I'm using English and what version of the app I'm using.
In all fairness, the build's not done yet, so give me time to test.
All right. So what I normally do with this is I can essentially spy on Clint and make sure that he's dogfooding like a good developer citizen, making sure he's using the latest version of the app. If I see any older versions, I get he gets a nasty email. But not only that, I can see how many daily sessions I have per user and what the average session duration is. Since my app is still running, I only have a single session. You're not going to get this, but I mean, in production, it's incredibly powerful for just that one line of code. Not only that, but crash analytics is going to be coming soon as well. So this is really all you need for your usage telemetry. It's really powerful. Back to slides. So with that, we hope that there's some things you can take away that'll improve your development productivity drastically for UWP development. We have several related sessions we think will also help you building UWP applications. And we'd love to open it up to some questions. So I'll go ahead and leave this up for a moment for pictures. There's one more slide that I want to show as well, so please hold on for just a moment. And if you have any questions about anything we just demoed, please navigate to the microphones in the center, and we're happy to answer those.
Let's go to the next slide really quick. So really quick, we have a couple call to actions. I'll let Daniel do the top two.
So because you can now install preview versions of Visual Studio and preview versions of Insider Windows SDKs and not mess up your production environment, we really want you to try it out and give us feedback. We're building these tools for you, and we want to make sure that we're making the right investments to empower you to build the best universal Windows platform applications. You have my email and Clint's email, as well as our Twitters at the bottom. If there's anything you encounter, some issues, things you'd like to see going forward, please let us know. We rely on customer feedback to drive the future of the product.
Yeah. Also, I would love for everyone to install Windows Template Studio. It's the fastest way to go from 0 to F5. You can find it at aka.ms/WTS.
And last but not least, these sessions are, again, to help you become better developers. We'd really appreciate it if you let us know what you liked, what you didn't like, so that we can tailor these in the future for your benefit. And I'll leave it here so you guys can take pictures. I saw some pictures. Any questions? Yes, we have one.
I've got a quick question around the mobile sensor.
Sure.
And I probably already know the answer, but is a lot of that content designed to replace Hockey App for the distribution side? Is it to replace actually using VSTS to do builds?
So it's a product on top of that. So it's more mobile focused. VSTS is more powerful and has a lot more configuration. But with that comes additional complications and essentially a bigger learning curve. Okay. So regarding Hockey App, it's kind of an evolution on top of Hockey App that's going to continue to evolve and really provide all of the tools and services for mobile app development. In terms of VSTS, I don't think it's ever going to be a competitor to VSTS. It's going to be the mobile-specific version and the more lightweight version for you to just use that. So cool. I hope that helps.
Another quick question.
Sure.
I saw that you could. There were a few options on there. There was VSTS,
GitHub, and Bitbucket.
Is it only Git repositories that you can do at the moment? But if you use VSTS, can you use...
I think you can use TFS as well.
Okay. There is an entire session on Visual Mobile Center, I would highly suggest watching that.
Okay, cool.
And I can get you in touch with the right people too if you want to come grab a card afterwards.
All right, fantastic. Thank you.
Any other questions? Yes.
We have
a couple more.
Yeah, and if you guys want Windows template stickers, we have a bunch right up here. Everyone loves stickers.
I saw you use the hamburger menu from the UWP community toolkit as a quick action. But in the Fluent Design, there's also a navigation view. How are you guys incorporate that?
So the UWP community toolkit will continue to evolve as the community and the platform evolves. So I would imagine that there will be a Fluent Design version of that with the community.
The UWP community toolkit solves problems for developers right now. And they have a rule, just like Windows Template Studio does, where it's N and N minus one. So right now, we support anniversary update and I'm blanking on the last
version. November update?
The November update. So the updated control for Fluent is a fall creator update only control. The UWP community toolkit person, Nicola, has a session that's actually going side by side with ours, and they're proactively figuring out how they can best support both to have a smooth transition over. Everyone will transition over to the updated control when appropriate.
All right. So thank you.
We are doing side by side, trying to figure out what is the best way to move forward. And ultimately, our goal is to be sure that you guys don't feel the pain, so you guys are up and going as fast as humanly possible.
And so the best is to stay with the UWP.
I would say for right now, do that, because also that control is fall creators update only in the Fluent Design.
Okay. So it won't be backwards compatible.
And it hasn't shipped yet. So if you want to do development right now and to get something in the store, I would highly suggest using the UWP community toolkit.
All right. Thank you.
No problem. All right, we'll stick around for a few minutes if you want to ask us anything. Otherwise, thank you so much for joining, and we look forward to seeing what you build.
Thank you.